Captain's log, stardate 5029.5. Responding to a distress call from our scientific colony on Triacus, we are beaming down to investigate.
They arrive on a sandy plain surrounded with grey outcrops of rock. On the ground in front of them, half a dozen men and women lie sprawled on the sand, dead. Spock scans the area with his tricorder. Kirk and McCoy go over to the bodies which lie around the burnt and blackened remains of what might have been a building. A red-haired man in a pink boiler suit struggles to his feet, clutching a phaser and a tricorder.
Professor Sarnes.
The professor looks at Kirk with wild eyes.
It's Kirk.
The man takes a faltering step towards him. His face creases up with pain, and he collapses to the ground. Kirk cradles him in his arms as McCoy hurries over.
He's dead, Captain.
He didn't seem to know me.
Kirk takes the tricorder from the professor's neck. He glances at one of the other bodies, a woman, her skin blotched and discolored. Kirk rolls her onto her back, takes a capsule from her mouth, sniffs it, and passes it over to McCoy.
Self-inflicted.
Kirk rewinds the tape on the professor's tricorder.
Must destroy ourselves! Alien upon us! The enemy from within! The enemy!
All this... self-inflicted. Mass suicide.
Children run out from a cave.
Kirk of the Starship Enterprise.
I'm Tommy Starnes. This is Mary, Steve, Ray, and Don.
Come, play with us! Come! Ring around the rosy, pocket full of posy, ashes, ashes, all down!
They dance around Kirk. Kirk's eyes narrow.
Space, a final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. And The Children Shall Lead, written by Edward J. Lasko, directed by Marvin Chomsky. Kirk and a security detail stand solemnly by the graves of the dead adults.
Captain's log, supplementary. We have buried the members of the Starnes exploration party. Everyone has been deeply affected by what has happened here, with some important exceptions.
One of the children nudges his neighbor. She nudges another little boy.
Play.
The boy nods, and all 5 children run off.
No sign of grief?
No, Jim. No indication of any kind.
Or of fear?
They seem completely secure and unafraid.
And you insist that their behavior is a sign of traumatic shock?
I don't insist, Jim, but I can't dismiss the possibility.
Child suppresses the fact that both parents are dead. I can't believe it.
Humans do have an amazing capacity for believing what they choose and excluding that which is painful.
Not these children, to this extent. It's incredible.
What those children saw is incredible, Jim. The way those deaths occurred, any reaction is possible, including lacunar amnesia. That's my diagnosis. Until specific tests can be made, it remains that.
I'll be guided by that opinion, Doctor, for the present. What about questioning them?
Not until the fabric of the traumatization weakens, or you can come up with another explanation for their behavior. Forcing them to see this experience now could cause permanent damage.
Accepted, Doctor.
One of the boys, Don, runs back.
Be careful.
He knocks over a pennant by the grave marker.
I'm sorry, Captain Kirk.
Kirk sticks the red and gold United Federation of Planets pennant back in the soil. He, Spock, and McCoy look at the children playing happily.
Children! Children, listen to me. It's late, and it's time to go up to the ship.
Oh, not yet. But we're just beginning to have fun.
Not now.
I'm sorry. You'll go up with the doctor.
McCoy goes over to the children, who look at him resentfully.
Come on, it's time to be going.
Kirk turns to Spock.
Whatever happened here is locked up inside those children.
The attack on Professor Starnes' party must surely have been unprovoked.
Attack? Mass suicide is what it seems to be.
I stand corrected, Captain. Induced would be a more precise term. Induced by an outside force.
Such as?
The release of bacteria, or a helpless mental depression and a state of suicidal anxiety could have been chemically induced.
What would make the children immune?
I do not know, but it is possible.
Then the children would have been exempted by conscious design.
A valid assumption, I would say.
And their present behavior explained by a fear of punishment.
Or the promise of reward.
An attack by an unknown assailant on an uninhabited planet. This planet is uninhabited, Mr. Spock, to the best of our information?
At present, yes.
Spock looks at his tricorder.
Odd.
Getting a reading?
Spock scans the area.
Seems to be some disturbance coming from that cave.
They go into the cave from which the children emerged. It's dark and cramped inside, with a few pieces of equipment lying on the floor. Spock continues his scans.
Picking up any life forms, Mr. Spock?
Definitely not humanoid, Captain. Impossible to make any specific identification. The readings do not correlate with any known information.
Oh, that's strange.
Kirk shivers.
That's very strange. I'm getting a feeling of anxiety in this place. That doesn't sound very scientific, does it? But it's strongest right here.
I'm not aware of it, Captain.
Maybe that's what's registering on your tricorder.
I am not familiar with anxiety, but I was not aware that it could be registered on sensors.
Oh. Of course, that's... that's me. It's me, but what's causing your tricorder to react?
Kirk hurries from the cave. Outside, he straightens up and his anxious expression is replaced by a puzzled frown.
Are you all right, Captain?
Yes, I'm fine. Fine. Just some sympathetic vibration with what happened here. Let's get back to the ship. I want to check out those tapes from Professor Starn's tricorder. And I am going to question those children.
Later, the children cluster around Nurse Chapel in the Enterprise rec room.
All right, children. Now, each card is a different flavor. You take your pick, and the computer will mix your favorite combination. Now, what would you like? Just call out your favorites.
All of the children but Stevie run over to the food synthesizers.
Well, would you like a surprise, Stevie? Okay.
She gives the dark-haired boy a card. Stevie looks at his ice cream.
It's coconut and vanilla. They're both white.
There, there now, Stevie.
There are unpleasant surprises as well as pleasant ones. That was your unpleasant surprise. Now, what would you like for your pleasant surprise?
Chocolate wobble and pistachio.
Oh, coming right up.
And peach.
Nurse Chapel puts another card in the slot.
All right. Ooh, it's going to be a wonderful surprise.
Stevie runs off happily with a huge bowl of ice cream. Outside...
The tests show no evidence of tension is due to lying. They behave as though nothing had gone wrong. And their checkout sound physically, and there are no signs of any foreign biochemical substance to account for their present state. I have no answers, Jim.
There has to be an answer.
Well, can't it wait till we get to a Starbase hospital so they can be checked out by a child specialist?
We're not leaving here until we find out what went on or what's going on.
Well, I won't prevent you questioning them, but it could harm the children if you do.
Could be far worse for them if I don't, and for us too.
Well, be careful.
Kirk comes into the rec room.
Yeah, and after this, we can all play games.
I'd
like getting your ice cream out of a
scooter. I'll have to eat some more before that.
That was fun.
You can change it
yourself. Well, well, well. You're all having such a good time. I think I'll join you. Is that all right?
Please do.
All right, I'll have a dish, too.
Oh, of course.
A little one. A very small little one. It's better than Triacus, isn't it?
That dirty old planet.
What's so good about that place?
Yeah. You weren't there very long. You don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't think your parents liked it very much either.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, mine sure did. Parents like stupid things.
Oh, I don't know about that. Parents like children.
Huh. That's what you think.
I'm sure your parents loved you. That's why they took you with them to Triacus. So they wouldn't be so far away from you for such a long time. That would make them very unhappy and they'd miss you. I'm sure that you would miss them too.
Tommy, a tall ginger-haired boy, the oldest of the children, looks at Kirk uneasily.
Busy.
The children get up from the table and run around the large exotic flower planter in the middle of the rec room, arms outstretched. Don runs back up to Nurse Chapel.
Guess what we are?
I know, a swarm of bees.
The blonde girl, Mary, jumps into Kirk's arms.
Watch out! I'll sting you!
She jabs him with her finger.
Now, wait a minute.
Can we have some more ice cream, please?
No, I don't think so. It'll spoil your dinner.
See what I told you? They all say it.
Yeah.
Kirk puts Mary down.
All right, children, you've had a busy day. I think you use some rest. Nurse Chapel will see you to your quarters.
Very good idea, Captain. Come on.
Sweet
Tommy.
Yes, all right, that's enough.
Just a moment. I'd like to ask you a question. Come and sit down.
The lanky, ginger-haired boy sits on a bench. Kirk sits on the table, looking down at him.
Tommy, will you tell me what you saw?
Saw where?
In the cave, on the planet, on Triacus.
You were there.
Did you see your father today?
I saw him.
Did he seem upset?
Yeah, he was very upset.
What about?
Well, I didn't ask him.
What was going on that would have upset him?
How should I know? He was always upset, just like you, Captain Kirk.
I'm not upset with you, Tommy, or your friends. We invited you aboard the Enterprise. Why would I do that if I didn't like you?
You have your reasons.
Aren't you unhappy about leaving Triacus?
That place? That's for adults.
Aren't you upset about leaving your parents?
My parents? They love it down there. Always busy.
Kirk's eyes narrow.
They're happy. But can I go now? I'm tired too, you know.
Yes, certainly. I'll take you.
I know the way.
Kirk ponders as Jamie leaves. He goes over to an intercom.
Kirk to security. Post a guard on the children. They are to be kept under constant watch.
Hail, hail, fire and snow. Call the angel, we will go. Far away, or to sea. Friendly.
come to me. Hail, hail, fire.
The five children have formed a circle, placing all their hands one on top of the other so that their arms are like the spokes of a wheel. As they chant, they slowly turn. A semi-transparent figure materializes beside them, a gray-haired man in a shimmering green cloak.
You have done very well, my friends. You have done what must be done. You have come aboard the Enterprise. Now, our destination is a Federation settlement. Captain Kirk will undoubtedly choose a closer station. Do not let that deter you. Marcus 12 has millions of people on it. Nearly a million will join us as our friends. The rest will be our enemies. Together with our other friends who will join us, we will defeat our enemies as we defeated them on Triacus. Million friends on Marcus will make us invincible. No one will tell us where to go, when to sleep, where to eat. The universe will be mine to command, yours to play in. To accomplish this great mission, we must first control the Enterprise. To control the ship, we first must control the crew. You know how to do that. That is your next task. And as you believe, so shall you do. So shall you do. As you believe, so shall you do. So shall you do. As you believe, so shall you do.
The children thump the table. The Enterprise continues orbiting the blue and green planet Triacus. Sulu and Chekov are at the con.
Maintaining standard orbit, Captain.
Lieutenant Uhura, any report from the planet security team?
Everything is quiet, sir.
Captain, I have extracted the salient portion of Professor Starn's tapes.
Good.
Kirk joins him by the view screen above the science console.
Among the technical facts he gathered, Professor Starn's also offered some rather unscientific hypotheses.
Let's see them.
A video.
Log date 5025.3. Ever since our arrival on Triacus, I've felt a certain growing feeling of uneasiness. At first, I attributed it to the usual case of nerves associated with any new project. However, I found that the rest of my associates are also bothered by these anxieties. The only ones not affected are the children. Bless them, find the whole thing an exciting adventure. Ah, to be young again.
Let's see some more of these unscientific hypotheses, Mr. Spock.
Unseen, Tommy comes onto the bridge.
5032.4. The feeling of anxiety we've all been experiencing is growing worse.
There is another portion, Captain, which I believe you'll find particularly interesting.
5038.3. Professor Wilkins finished his excavation today. Although whatever civilization that might have been here was destroyed by some natural catastrophe, it would appear that one of the race took refuge in the cave. And for our efforts, we are becoming only more apprehensive. As if some unseen force were influencing us.
What happened?
Unknown.
Kurt turns and finds himself face to face with the boy.
I didn't see you come in, Tommy.
Captain, after we leave here, can you take us to Marcus 12?
No, we'll probably take you to a Federation starbase.
But I have relatives on Marcus 12.
I'm sorry, Tommy. Marcus 12 is not within our patrol area. Mr. Spock will pursue this in my quarters.
Captain, can I stay here and watch? I'll be very quiet.
All right, Tommy. Lieutenant, have Dr. McCoy report to my quarters for a brief conference. Mr. Leslie.
Kirk gestures to Leslie, the security guard who accompanied Tommy to the bridge, to keep an eye on the boy. Kirk and Spock step into the turbo lift. Tommy looks around. Lieutenant Uhura is at the communications console, Sulu is at the helm, and Chekov at navigation. There are crewmen at the engineering and environmental stations. Tommy goes over to Sulu.
Hi there.
Hi.
Chekov turns and smiles at him as well. Tommy makes the same table-thumping gesture he made to disrupt Spock's video of Professor Starnes. Sulu's eyes droop. Sulu makes a course change and takes the Enterprise out of orbit. Tommy looks at Chekhov and makes the same thumping gesture. Chekhov feeds in new navigation coordinates. A security officer accompanies Mary onto the bridge and waits by the lift doors as she goes over to Tommy.
What is that?
Sulu and Chekhov look at the forward view screen.
The planet Triacus.
Will we see that all the time we stay here?
Yes, we will. All the time we're here.
He sees Triacus on the screen.
He thinks he sees it.
In reality, the screen shows stars and a view of deep space. Uhura glances up, then stares in disbelief.
Mr. Sulu, the screen, we're out of orbit!
Tommy makes the same gesture, and the attractive black communications officer blinks and settles back into her chair. On the forward view screen, she too now sees the image of the planet Triacus. She shakes her head, puzzled.
Will we reach Marcos 12 soon?
Very soon.
In engineering auxiliary control, a technician and an engineer are monitoring the systems. Dawn, the young black child, creeps in and makes the thumping gesture. The boy slips away as the two men make changes to the settings. Scotty comes in with an electronic report pad. He makes a note, glances at the technician standing at the panel, gives a startled double take, looks more closely, and hurries over to the engineer sitting at the main console.
When did we change course?
We haven't changed course.
What do you mean we haven't changed course? Look at your bridge control monitor.
We're still in orbit, sir.
Have you gone completely blind? That's not orbiting position.
Don't touch the controls, sir.
What the devil do you think you're doing?
We must remain in this orbit till the bridge orders a change.
You blind fool! Can't you see what's in front of you? We're not in orbit!
The man stands.
I will not disobey an order from the bridge.
You are disobeying an order from the bridge. Now step aside!
You're losing control of yourself, sir.
Not yet.
Scotty hurls the engineer against the wall and takes over the console. The technician grabs him. Scotty elbows him in the stomach. The engineer gives Scotty a karate chop and takes back the console. Kirk, McCoy, and Spock are in the captain's quarters.
I'm being influenced to do things that do not make sense. I even went so far as to call Starfleet Command to request a spaceship to be used as a transport. It was only when I couldn't tell them what I wanted to transport that I began to realize that my mind was being directed. I decided to send a dispatch to Starfleet, warning them. God forgive us. We must destroy ourselves. Alien upon us. The enemy from within. The enemy!
Kirk switches off the recording.
He never completed the entry. And the dispatch was never sent, except for scenes of family life, games and picnics with the children. That is the complete record. Whatever overwhelmed them must have done so with incredible speed. Otherwise, the professor would have provided details of the experience. He was an excellent scientist and tireless in his pursuit of the truth.
That could be what destroyed him.
Possible, Captain. Evil does seek to maintain power by suppressing the truth.
Or by misleading the innocent.
Misleading the innocent. I wonder, do you mean the children may be involved?
Kirk gets up from his desk, pondering.
Yes, Doctor. Spock, what do we know about the race that lived here?
According to the legend, Triacus was the seat of a band of marauders who made constant war throughout the system of Epsilon Indy. After many centuries, the destroyers were themselves destroyed by those they had preyed upon.
Is that the end of it?
No. Like so many legends, this one too has a frightening ending. It warns that the evil is awaiting a catalyst to set it again into motion and send it marauding across the galaxy.
Is it possible that the evil found the catalyst?
I was speaking of a legend, Captain.
But most legends have their basis in facts, Spock.
I think I read you, Jim. But as medical officer, I must warn you that unless the normal grief is tapped and released from these children, you are treading dangerously.
I understand your diagnosis, Doctor, and I will respect it. But not to the exclusion of the safety of the Enterprise, thank you.
McCoy leaves, tight-lipped.
Spock, what other expeditions have visited Triacus?
According to Federation records, this is the first.
What was it Professor Stern said about the unseen force?
He said that an unseen force was influencing him, that he recognized it, was beginning to fight it, and canceled his request for a ship.
A ship? Yes, a ship for Triacus, but why? And by whom? Security detachment, ready for relief duty on Triacus. Assemble in the transporter room immediately. I'll have some questions for that planet detachment as soon as they're beamed up. I think it's about time we found out whether Professor Starn's enemy within is on the planet below or here on board ship with us. Come on.
Unaware that the Enterprise has left orbit and is on course for Marcos 12, Kirk and Spock come into the transporter room where two security guards are waiting to beam down.
Your tour of duty will last 1 hour. Be prepared with your communicators at all times to report any alien beings. Don't wait to investigate. Beam down the guards.
The transporter chief advances the controls, and the two red-shirted guards dematerialize.
Beam up the security detachment from Triacus.
The chief resets, then activates the controls. No one materializes on the platform.
Spock.
Spock takes over the console.
What's wrong?
No one beams up.
I am unable to lock onto the proper coordinates, Captain.
Why not?
It appears we are no longer orbiting Triacus.
That's impossible. If we're not orbiting Triacus, then the men I beamed down are dead.
Captain, we are no longer orbiting Triacus.
Activate the bridge monitor screen.
They go over to the screen, and Spock switches it on. It shows them traveling through deep space with no planet in view.
Captain to bridge.
Mr. Sulu, we're not orbiting Triacus.
With all respects, Captain, you're wrong. I have Triacus on my screen now.
You're off course. I'm coming right up.
High, high, fire and soap.
On the bridge, the crew watch indulgently as the five children place their hands on top of each other and turn in a slow circle. Kirk freezes as he becomes aware of the children's chant. He looks over at them. Kirk, Spock, and the bridge crew stare as the grey-haired figure in the shimmering cape appears by the turbo lift in an aura of green light. The green figure looks at the children.
Friends, we have reached a moment of crisis. The enemy have discovered our operation, but they are too late. They no longer control the ship. We do. We shall prevail. They will take us any place we desire. So, back to your stations. Maintain your controls. If resistance mounts, call upon their beasts. Their beast will serve us well. The fear in each one of them is the beast which will consume him. Remember how it was on Triacus? If they resist, so shall it be on the Enterprise. If you need me, call and I will appear. Our new goal is Marcus 12. It is our new beginning. We must not falter.
He fades from sight. Tommy turns to the other children.
Go to your stations. Mary, you remain here with me.
Stevie, Don, and Ray go to the lift. A security guard gets in with them. Kirk goes over to Tommy, and they eye each other warily. Kirk thinks better of it and goes back to the con.
Helmsman, disregard what you see on the screen, what you think you see on the screen. Set a course for Starbase 4.
Tommy makes the gesture. Sulu sees the view screen full of swords coming towards him.
Osman, did you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Sulu stares and does nothing.
Lieutenant Hura, contact Starbase 4. Tell them we're bringing the children there. Tell Starfleet Command I suspect them of being alien in nature, and I want a thorough investigation made upon our arrival.
Aye, aye, sir.
Tommy makes the thumping gesture, and Lieutenant Uhura sees herself in an imaginary screen on the console, old, withered, and white-haired. Tommy looks triumphant. Kirk hurries over to Uhura.
Lieutenant, what are you staring at?
I see my death. A long death. Disease and pain. I see my death.
Lieutenant. Lieutenant, there's nothing there.
Oh, God! Captain, don't let it be.
Mr. Spock, you make the call to Starfleet.
Uhura stares at the non-existent image of herself and buries her face in her hands. Kirk goes back to the con.
Mr. Sulu, I ordered you to change course.
Sulu stares at the procession of swords on the view screen. Kirk looks at the screen and sees only stars.
Sulu.
Captain, stay away from the controls. If you touch them, we'll be destroyed.
Mr. Sulu, there's nothing there.
Captain, why are we bothering Starfleet?
Kirk turns and looks at Spock in disbelief. He's standing beside Lieutenant Uhura on the gallery. Kirk goes up to him.
That was an order, Spock.
This bridge is under complete control.
Complete.
There is no need.
Take a look around you.
Spock frowns, puzzled, and turns to the console. Tommy makes the gesture. Spock's hand freezes. Tommy makes the gesture again, and Spock's hand trembles as he tries to reach the controls. He brings his hand to his face and examines it with a frown. Spock turns back to Kirk matter-of-factly.
I cannot obey your order, Captain.
Kirk looks at Uhura. She glances at her wizened self in the non-existent monitor. And she buries her head in her hands again. Kirk looks at Sulu at the helm, eyes wide with terror, staring at the swords that only he can see on the forward view screen. The captain goes over to Leslie.
Take Mr. Sulu to his quarters. He's relieved of duty.
Lieutenant Leslie doesn't react at all.
That said, take it over to the loosest and quarters. Yes.
Tommy makes the gesture. Spock watches with interest, puts a finger to his temple, closes his eyes, and concentrates fiercely. Spock's eyes snap open.
Did you hear me?
Kirk shakes Leslie by the shoulders. The lieutenant remains staring straight ahead. Kirk turns round and looks at the children. Tommy folds his arms with a triumphant smile. Mary smirks. Kirk goes over to Tommy. Tommy makes the gesture, and Kirk looks around the bridge, terrified.
Captain, we must get off this bridge.
I'm losing command. I'm losing my ability to command. I'm losing the Enterprise.
Spock drags Kirk into the lift.
I'm losing command. I'm losing the Enterprise. The ship is sailing on and on. I'm alone. Alone.
Lost command.
I've lost the Enterprise.
Kirk grabs Spock by the throat, eyes wide with panic.
Jim.
Spock looks down at Kirk, totally indifferent to the captain's hands at his throat. Gradually, Kirk regains his senses and releases his grip. He takes a deep breath.
I've got command.
Correct, Captain.
The lift arrives and they step out.
Where to, Captain?
Auxiliary control, my Vulcan friend. This ship is off course.
In auxiliary control.
I want you to override the bridge navigation system, plot a course for Starbase 4.
I can't do that, sir.
Why not?
These are very sensitive instruments. I will not have you upset their delicate balance. We would all be lost, forever lost.
Kirk sees the small black child making the gesture.
Go away now. Go away or we'll kill you.
Scotty, listen to me. The Enterprise has been invaded by alien beings. Its destination is Marcus. If we take it there, millions will die the way they died at Triacus.
Kirk makes a dive for the control desk. The engineer throws him off, and a fight develops. Spock and Kirk throw Scotty and the two crewmen off and retreat into the corridor. From behind a partition screen, Don, the small child, stares at the doors. Outside, Spock looks at Kirk in concern.
Oh, I'm all right, Spock. My beast is finished. It won't return.
Captain, so long as the children are present, there is danger. They are the carriers.
Spock, they're not the alien beings. They're children being misled.
They are followers. Without followers, evil cannot spread.
They're children.
Captain, the 430 men and women on board the Enterprise and the ship itself are endangered by these children.
They don't understand the evil that they're doing.
Perhaps that is true. But the evil that is within them is spreading fast. And unless we can find a way to remove it,
we'll have to kill them.
Tommy appears, followed by Chekhov and two security guards who step past Tommy and come over to the captain.
Captain Kirk.
What is it, then?
I have been instructed to place you and Mr. Spock under arrest.
By whose order?
Starfleet Command, sir.
Where did you hear this order, Ensign?
Chekhov turns and looks back at Tommy, who stands with his hazel eyes fixed on the confrontation.
Now listen to me. This order is false. I want you and your men to return to the stations.
I'm sorry, Captain, but I must insist you and Mr. Spock come with me to the detention section.
Ensign, listen to me.
Chekhov pulls a phaser from his belt and points it at Kirk.
Do not force me to kill you, sir. I will, if I have to. You come peacefully, Captain.
Ensign, listen to me. This is a false order, Ensign.
I have never disobeyed an order, Captain. You know, I have never
disobeyed. I know that, Ensign. You have never disobeyed an order, but an alien being is aboard the ship.
Disobey now. I cannot disobey.
Ensign, listen to me. You will disobey this order.
Starfleet Command supersedes your order, sir.
Spock karate chops the phaser from Chekhov's hand, and he and Kirk jump the guards. Tommy's gestures have no effect. Spock disables a guard with a Vulcan nerve pinch. Spock grabs the phaser from the floor.
Enough.
Tommy runs back towards the bridge.
Take these men to detention. Then join me on the bridge.
Spock takes Chekhov and the two guards away at gunpoint. Kirk hurries off down the corridor. On the bridge, Tommy sits smugly in the captain's chair. Mary stands just in front of him. Kirk surveys the bridge and steps down to Tommy.
The Enterprise will never reach Marcus 12. You will not be landed there.
The crew will take us, the crew believes.
The crew?
does not understand. When we make them understand, as I understand, they won't take you to Marcus.
They will! No.
We are going to Marcus! We are going to Marcus! We're going to follow our friend!
They will!
Your friend? Where is your friend? Where is that stowaway? Why does he hide?
He will come if we call him.
But we won't. We don't need him. We're not afraid of you.
Good. I'm glad you're not afraid of me. But your leader is afraid. What's he afraid of?
He's not afraid of anybody.
He's not afraid of anything.
He's afraid to be seen. And when the crew sees and hears him, they'll understand that he is not their friend. And they won't follow him.
He is our friend.
Then let him show himself. Bring him out. Let him prove to me that he is my friend, and I'll follow him to Marcus 12 and to the ends of the universe.
No!
Spock comes onto the bridge.
Mr. Spock, play back the chant the children sang to summon up the Gorgon.
Hail, hail, fire and snow. Call the angel, we will go.
Kirk comes to stand beside the children. Mary and Tommy look at each other uncertainly. The other three children, Don, Stevie and Ray, step out of the turbo lift. A green shape starts to materialize on the gallery by the lift doors. It remains half-formed, like a shimmering jelly. Kirk steps over to it.
The time has come to see the world as it is.
The shape assumes its human form.
Who has summoned me?
I did, Gorgon. My beast is gone. It lost its power in the light of reality. I command again. And I ordered you here.
No, Captain. I command here. My followers are strong and faithful and obedient. That's why we take what is ours wherever we go.
You take from those who do not know you.
And we know you.
Then you know I must win, Captain.
Not if we join together to fight you.
Foolish. You will be destroyed. I would ask you to join me, but you are gentle, and that is a grave weakness.
We are also very strong.
Ah, but your strength is canceled by your gentleness. You are full of goodness. Such as you cannot be changed. You are like the parents. You must be eliminated.
Kirk goes along the gallery.
Children, I have pictures of some of you on Triacus. I'd like to show them to you. Would you like to see them? Mr. Spock, the pictures.
I forbid it.
Why should you fear it?
I fear nothing.
So we were told. Mr. Spock, the pictures, the children are waiting.
The being watches guardedly as Spock brings up the pictures on the screen above his console. The images show the five children happily playing ball and picnicking with their parents. In the background is the igloo-shaped geodome that must have been the charred building Kirk discovered on landing. On screen, Mary's father picks her up and hugs her. On the bridge, Mary smiles fondly at the memory. Mary's and Tommy's expressions falter as they look over at the green being, but they break into happy smiles again when they look back at the screen. The three smaller children also laugh as they see themselves playing with their parents. Their eyes sparkle. Abruptly, the image changes to their parents' dead bodies sprawled in the sand. The children look accusingly at the green figure.
They would not help transport us. They were against us. They have to be eliminated.
Spock shows some video of the graves and gravestones. Tears start to trickle down the children's faces.
Tommy's father would have destroyed you, but he recognized you too late.
And you were also too late. kind ones always are.
Not always, Gorgon, not this time. You can't hide from them. They see you as we see you. They know what you are.
Mary's eyes are red and swollen with crying.
Even the children learn.
You are my future generals. Together we can raise armies of followers. Go to your post. The first great victories are upon us. You will see. We have millions of friends on Marcus 12. We shall exterminate all who oppose us. Our purity of purpose cannot be contaminated by those who disagree, who will not cooperate, who do not understand. They must be annihilated.
Don't be afraid. Look at him.
The being's face starts to become hideous and deformed.
Without you children, he's nothing.
He gets uglier.
The evil remains within him.
And uglier.
I command you, to your post. Carry out your duties, or I will destroy you. You will be swept aside to make way for the strong.
Look how ugly he really is. Look at him. And don't be afraid.
Death to you all! Death to you all! Death to you all!
The figure fades and vanishes. Sulu stares manically at the view screen. The image of the swords fades. He turns with relief and glances at Uhura, who takes her hands from her face. McCoy comes onto the bridge. Kirk is comforting the children.
It's all right.
They're crying, Jim. I don't know how it happened, but it's good to see.
It's all right, Mary. It's all right. It's all right, isn't it, Doctor?
Yes, it's all right. We can help them now.
McCoy takes Mary from Kirk and carries her in his arms. The captain goes back to his command chair.
Marcus 12, dead ahead, sir.
Reverse course, Mr. Sulu.
Aye, sir.
McCoy leads the children to the lift. Uhura brings Kirk a report pad to sign.
Course reversed, Captain.
Kirk glances at Uhura and smiles.
Set course for Starbase 4, Mr. Sulu.
Yes, sir.
This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.